consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Hello and welcome to the RTE Soccer Podcast. I'm Marie Crowe and it's a very special episode today. In collaboration with the 20 by 20 movement, we are going to have a look at women's football in Ireland. The Rugby Podcast on Wednesday and the GAA Podcast on Thursday will also be asking questions about the future of women's sport in keeping with the latest chapter of the 20 by 20 campaign. Now I'm delighted to say that I am joined by a stellar cast today. Lisa Fallon, head coach with the London Lionesses, Mary Curtin of Treaty United and an ex-Ireland international, Tony O'Donoghue, RTE soccer correspondent, and Louise Quinn of Fiorentina and the Republic of Ireland. You're all very, very welcome. I'm going to start with you, Louise, because I'm so curious about your experience. You've been through the system, you've developed through the ranks to senior level, and now you're seeing the next generation come behind you. Is the experience that you see the new girls coming through have, is that different to the one that you had?
Well, yeah, I would definitely like to think so and hope that, you know, that the pathway is something a lot clearer. And for me, I suppose looking at on a personal level and one thing because of 20 by 20, I think it's really making things far more visible. And for hopefully then people, you know, that younger girls can actually see my path, see that sometimes it was difficult, that sometimes, you know, it wasn't so straightforward, and but then to know that pathway is there, and if you just, you know, fight for that, and if you really want it, it is there for the taking, and that it's really, really possible. And I think you can see, you know, a lot of that kind of now, I suppose, again, younger generation, again, even the likes of how Rhianna Jarrett, Megan Connolly, Denise O'Sullivan, you know, Leanne Kiernan are now coming up through the ranks. And you know, well, Denise has been there for just as long as me, to be honest. She's a old experienced one, but at just such a young age. But showing that there are all these different possibilities, and it doesn't matter where you come from. You can come from, you know, down in Cork or Leanne and up in Cavan. You know, it's possible everywhere if you really just put your mind to it.
It's so important to have those pathways and to see people go along the way and find their pathway and then reach their potential as well. But Lisa, for you, those pathways weren't that clear. You actually had to forge the pathways and make them and develop them, and by doing that have shown the way for the people coming through.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I look back to when I was playing and back in my early days, like, we were changing in behind car doors on the sides of the road, and, you know, we didn't even have dressing rooms, and you could be playing anywhere. And when I look at how far it's come from then, I think it's brilliant that players now probably have got a pathway, whereas back then, if you weren't in the right place at the right time or you didn't know the right people, you wouldn't be even seen or spotted. So to have it developed to this point is fantastic. But I think, you know, this entire generation of female players, and I would include the likes of Louise and Mary in that as well, because, you know, you have to have that resilience and that capacity to see the goal and keep doing the work. And I say it all the time, anyone can be a footballer, but not everyone can become a professional footballer. And there is a really big difference. And there's a lot of sacrifice that every player has to make in order to make it to the elite level. But what I do think has changed has been, you know, the facilities, certainly the standard of coaching that players have now available to them is much, much better than it probably was, say, 20 years ago. And it's really important that we continue to drive that. I was reading Laura Cusack's story from last year, and she, like us, and even Laura would be a lot younger than me, say, for example, but as an upcoming coach, she felt that there was no female role models when she was growing up, and so many of us were deprived of that. But what's happening now is this current generation of young girls now have role models all of the Republic of Ireland women's national team, all of those players are now role models for the next generation of Irish players. And that's a testament to the work that's gone on and the sacrifices that all of those players and certainly the coaches and people who believed in the game and stayed in the game when there was no visibility, no rewards, apart from just that little bit of satisfaction of being on the sidelines and seeing a group of girls go out and be able to play. And I think where we are now, and things like the 20 by 20 campaign increase that visibility and that awareness. And it's so important, but we owe where we are now to that generation who did it just because they loved it and for no other reason.
That's for sure. Tony O'Donoghue, just from your own experience of covering women's football, I imagine that it has changed beyond recognition just in terms of the amount of it that we're seeing now.
It's far more visibility, certainly, and the 20 by 20 campaign has been a big part of that. But it's interesting that what Lisa says there, facilities remains an issue, and an issue for football in this country in particular. You know, I intended, because of the pledge, the 20 by 20, to get to see more club games this year. As the COVID thing turned out, that didn't happen. But, you know, to tune into the WNL feed of Shelburne and Piemont the other day. And this works for the men as well. But, you know, Talca Park and the facilities there aren't brilliant. There's no question about that. The game was very good, but the facilities aren't great in terms of broadcasting. And in terms of if we had spectators in, it's not ideal. When you bring the women's game, as you would do with the men's game, into the right environment. I mean, I look back at a brilliant experience of going to the last Women's World Cup in France, and to put the women's game and the top professionals into the right environment, and it changes everything. It looks fantastic. Now, I did notice the North London Derby this week, and again, Arsenal still not playing in the Emirates. You know, with Tottenham are now, when they're late to the game, but their women are going to play in their amazing new stadium, and you need to get the right setting in order to show the game to its best level. And so facilities will remain an issue in this country. You look at the fact that we did bring the Women's Cup final to the Aviva, but as part of a double header with the men's final, I'm not sure that really works. And I think it's time that the women's final stood for itself and stood on its own 2 feet as an event and as a day in itself. But certainly there's a lot more visibility in the game now. And as Lisa was pointing out as well, the role models, the likes of Louise. I mean, it's marvellous when I do cover the women's international games to see the effort that the players put in afterwards to connect with their fans and with you know, the young boys and girls who will be following them into the future. They put a lot of work into making sure that they're there for them, seeing them after games. And definitely I can see there's a huge difference in that.
Now, Mary Curtin has just joined us as well. And Mary and I played on the same team, even though we're from completely different counties and lived miles apart. But it was the only team around. And Mary, when you think about it, like travelling 30, 40 miles just to go and play matches, I don't think we ever had a training session because we just physically couldn't possibly have one because we all lived so far apart. But it was just this commitment to want to play football. We played with Lifford Ladies and it was the only team, or I think maybe if you take away Cork and Waterford, but definitely like around Limerick, Galway, Clare, it was the only option that we had to play, and we needed our parents to be really committed to making it happen for us.
Yeah, absolutely, Marie. I think credit due to Damien Walsh there. He was huge for women's football down in around Munster. Like Damien, he brought us internationally as well to play tournaments and things. I remember back in 99, I was 13 years old. He brought us out to Minnesota for a tournament. And at that time, the Women's World Cup was on in the US. And it was that famous time where Brandi Chastain, she famously ripped off her shirt and was wearing nothing but a sports bra. Yeah, I think 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It was amazing. Yeah. Like, and we did that a couple of times. You know, we were back in 2001, and you know, like, it just really gave us players an opportunity to see, like, even the World Cup, you know, and just to see how like it was just getting bigger then. So it was great experience. Like, Damien was fantastic.
And if you look now what you have with Treaty United and how far football in the locality has come, okay, I know things aren't always brilliant, but still to have a dedicated team, a dedicated club and one where the right structures are being put in place, it's taken a while, but it's definitely progress, Mary.
Yeah, it's been a long, slow road, I suppose. And, you know, the step from junior football, junior club, game up to international level, where which is what we had when we were younger, it was too large. And so now with the under 17 league in there and the senior, the women's national league, like, you know, it just bridges that gap, and players can better be equipped to step up to international level, you know, when they're brought in. So it's really good.
Louise, let's talk about that gap, because it's really hard to know what's the right thing to do, because in one hand, you know, you want to see your players coming up through the domestic route. And then the other hand, we know that, you know, to really achieve success, you need to be playing at the top level, and that isn't at home. So just trying to find that balance is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. And you think that really is. But for me, I think it has to be, you know, the next goal, or at least that next ambition, which has been something, I don't know, like, you haven't even kind of heard anything about trying to bridge that gap to maybe even get, you know, some players semi-professional. You know, at least there's, you know, the league has been running now for almost 10 years, I think, and still trying to get some games to, you know, to go ahead, or for sometimes for referees to turn up to games, I'm even being told. And, you know, I think even talking to the girls when we were in national team, you know, at the moment, I'm not even sure if there's currently, you know, a sponsor for the league. So, you know, for to be kind of going into starting a league campaign like that, you know, that's tough now, not to go in without a sponsor. And, you know, you want to see that ambition. And, you know, there really is nothing more that, like, I would love to be able to, you know, when I'm almost ready to hang up the boots, be able to come back and play, you know, and play in that league. And, you know, but we'll want to see us grow and to keep getting bigger and better, you know, because it is, it's similar, I think, how the League of Ireland is running. You know, it is some of those, you know, the better players can go abroad, but there can still be a brilliant competitive league that is entertaining for people to watch, that you want to watch on TV. And, you know, even the game last night, Rovers Dundalk as well, that was, you know, such a competitive game. Rovers, you know, just dominating. So, you know, there's still so much entertainment and everything there that can be brought forward from a domestic league. And, you know, that's really something that I would love to see happen. And, you know, for the girls that are playing there, you know, I think they deserve that. You know, and again, Mary has been one of those. You know, she works hard in what she does, but then, you know, she wants to also, you know, play hard as well, be able to, you know, to get in there, play competitive games at the highest level that she can in Ireland, and still be able to achieve what she can at home. So for me, that's the next step, and something that you would love to see, and really kind of, and, you know, for me, you can see that potential there. But I think you need, unfortunately, it is about money and sponsorships and, you know, and a lot of commitments and time. But, you know, for me, there has to be showing some sort of sign that that's going to happen. And I know I haven't been there in a long time, but for me, I haven't kind of heard much about that yet.
Tony, just given where Irish football is and the you know, the instability that is around the FAI at the moment, do you think any time in the near future that the Women's National League is going to be able to thrive and be given the support that it needs to take that next step?
Well, you look at, I think, the sponsorship that Lidl, for example, have done with women's Gaelic games, Gaelic football, has been a tremendous success. And you'd want to think from a women's point of view whether they should not maybe they should look ploughing their own furrow, in the sense of looking at their own opportunities. I mean, there's a huge market for the games, and people are only waking up to that. And so it might be a question that together the FAI and the Women's National League could be stronger, or maybe apart, and maybe forging their own identity might allow them to get different types of sponsorship and different types of partnerships. But I think there's much more of an awareness now of the potential for the women's game, and it's an opportunity to be exploited.
Lisa, do you think it's really necessary to do that? Because if you just look at the Women's Super League and you know the influx of the big name stars that are coming into it, it might not always be accessible to Irish players who want to have that career as it grows and grows, a bit like reflecting the way the Men's Premier League grew.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think just to touch on what everyone's been saying there, I think the league here really does need committed people to really go and sell it and create its unique selling points and go after that sponsorship and build it into an attractive entity and make it something that it can be and sell it as that and bring in that revenue. And if we've learned anything from what the GAA have done with ladies Gaelic football, we can see the crowds that they're able to get into Croke Park for the big showcase games. And we can also see the revenue that can be generated for a product that is sold properly. And I think that is an area that can absolutely have somebody go after it, someone who believes in it and someone who cares about it and somebody who understands its potential. And I think that's something that's really important. Having had the experience of working at Chelsea, I've seen the other side of how far it can really go. And the level of the facilities that were there, the level of investment in the team, the professionalism, and it is the other end of the spectrum, but it does show that it can be achieved, because 10 years ago, the Chelsea women's team wasn't at that level, didn't have that level of facilities. And it just goes to show that it can be done. And even at the club I'm at now, it's a standalone club, not allied to a men's team. But it just shows with the right investment and people backing it, you can have a full-time professional club and you can achieve it. So I do believe it can be achieved, and I do believe it can be achieved here in this country. But it needs focus and it needs to be driven and it needs people to really, really go after it. In terms of the pathway, yes, the Women's Super League and the development of it there, now that it's got the profile, and I mean, there's talks now that the Premier League will take it over, and there'll be TV rights, and that level of money now starts to filter in. But that's because they've realised its potential. The Women's World Cup was showcased all over the world. People could see this is a product. This is something people will watch. This is good.
And you know what, Lisa, it's not often that I'd give FIFA credit for anything, but they probably took the lead there in terms of how they marketed it and how they insisted on it getting proper resources. And it took the WSL, they're following basically. And when you think the likes of Manchester United and Tottenham are only recently after adding women's teams, because I think they were almost shamed into it. And then they realised, yes, there's an appetite for this and there's a market for this.
Absolutely, massively. And I know Casey Stoney really well at Manchester United, and yes, they're only new to it, but the investment that's gone in there and the belief and the pressure now that she'll be under, and that's what people want. That's what people, they want that pressure, they want that visibility, and they want to be able to drive it on, because it can be there, and women should have the same opportunities to pursue a career in football, be that in play as a player, as a coach, as a sports scientist, as an analyst. There should be the same level of opportunity in women's football as there is in men's. And obviously here in this country, there are other issues at play, and other houses have to be got in order. But it doesn't mean that we can't drive it here. And it can become a really strong entity. And I think that's the one thing we can learn from other countries like England, of what they've done, the investment, the commitment to it, and that resilience and that determination to go after it and build it and make it something that it is. And now it's the showcase league in the world. It's the league this year that everybody wants to play in. All the top players across Europe and in the United States are now coming to the UK because that's where they want to play. That's where they know the visibility is. That's where they know the commercial opportunities are. And that's where they know that the coverage is and the professionalism. And that's where they know that the quality, and they as players will be tested at the highest level. And that is a testament to the work that's gone on in the last 5 years.
I suppose while I'm giving credit where it's not always due, I should also give the Irish government some credit, because, you know, we were discussing the state of Irish football and the state supports that were given by government to the FAI in their recent current crisis. You know, part of that was predicated on the women's game being properly resourced as well, and that was a condition of the funding. And that's good to see as well. But it's the basic you'd expect, isn't it, really?
Mary, you're building something from the ground up with Treaty United. Do you feel that you're being supported enough?
Look, I'm not in the board myself or anything like that. I think there's a lack of the FAI leading the way here for clubs. I feel like they should be leading the way in their support and you know, just to offer a lot more for clubs, especially new clubs, because it just seems to me that it's seriously lacking. And then other than that, in the Women's National League, like, fair enough, you know, with the strike in 2017, you know, things improved for the Women's National Team, but they forgot the Women's National League, I feel like. And, you know, players noticed that. And, you know, I think it's just recently any change that I see within the FAI is only when the PFAI stand in. And, you know, that's not really good enough. So there's really just a lack of a master plan here. Like when do you see the FAI coming out and discussing, like, what's the plan forward for the women's program? What are the milestones that they want to achieve? What are the targets, you know? So what are the goals even, you know? So there's just that lack of discussion on that. And, you know, how can you be forward thinking? How can you go forward without a plan in place? And it just, there seems to be a lack of a plan.
It's clear that you're very passionate about it, Mary. Do you try and communicate with them about it? Or, you know, do you have ideas as well that you think might help to make things better?
Yeah, so I've tried to communicate, I suppose, due to players' frustration. At the end of last season, a couple of players got together, probably started by Sylvia G and Anya O'Gorman, and we got a representative from each club, and we got together and just discussed the problems, and from the players' perspective, you know. And because the question was really asked, you know, is the league improving since its inception in 2011? And the kind of general consensus was no, it is not. And, you know, we actually eventually got the PFAI involved, and we were met with resistance from the FAI. So it was very disappointing. And only now, you know, since that discussion, like, we tried to meet with them in January, and, like, there was such resistance, it was very, like, it's embarrassing the what we were met with. And you know, and we're just trying to help the league, you know. We're from the player perspective, you know. We have an interesting viewpoint and a unique viewpoint, you know, and so even though we are trying to reach out and tell the FBI, you know, what can be improved. And yes, me and other players in the league have definitely opinions on how it can improve. But even when we reach out to say, like, what needs to be improved, it's just there's such a lack of a plan. And, you know, it's just very disappointing.
What were they resisting, Murray?
They don't. I suppose the PFAI, they don't like their involvement, and, you know, it's just, they don't want another public embarrassment. And, you know, I think that it exposes them, basically. And look, we're here to help, and we're trying to, there's a lot of people who want improved conditions for women's football. Now, since then, luckily, we have seen improvements in the media, but does it take push from the PFAI always, you know? Can we not see leadership from the FAI? And, like, even it was disappointing to see even Niall Quinn's last appearance on the Late Late Show, you know. I think the Louise, you'll know, they were playing that weekend, and there was zero mention of our women's national team playing a game. You know, I like Niall Quinn, but, you know, if you're coming into the FAI, you need to include the women's programme. It needs to be ingrained in the DNA of women's football, of football in general in the country, you know. So, you know, it needs, whatever goes forward, the women's program needs to be included.
Tony, just given recent history, it does seem that women's football does need the PFAI to give the FAI a push.
Well, certainly during the strike, that was the case, and that's been discussed and written about in Champagne Football. And people on this call and this conversation will remember the time of the women's strike, and there was a lot of pressure being put on the women who stood up, and the PFAI supported them, and that pressure continued. Now, that some of that was John Delaney led, but there seemed to have been a feeling that, you know, we can leave the women's game to the side, or it certainly wouldn't be in the priorities, and there is an opportunity now for the FAI to make maybe only gestures, but important gestures. Maybe, you know, the women should be paid the same amount as the men for international appearances. From, you know, it's not a huge amount anyway, and it's about you know, equality and equal representation, and it's something that the men could make a gesture on behalf of the women, and I think that's important.
Yeah, that's something that's always struck me. I've always wondered why, when it came to the women's team, that so few, if any, of the men actually came out and stood up and gave their support behind the women's team. Louise,
that same could have been said around the time of the strike. Yeah. You know, it was you'd find it very hard to get any of the men to even comment on it, because, you know, I think maybe there's a raising of general awareness, political awareness, equality awareness, racial awareness around the game now. Because let's be honest, you know, the notion that sport and politics doesn't mix is fine for a secondary school debating society, but it's part of life. And if you're able to have a stand on Black Lives Matter, you should equally be able to have a stand on equality.
Absolutely, Tony. And Louise, just from the female international player's point of view, how do you feel things have progressed since he did take that stand in Liberty Hall?
Yeah, you know, it has been, you know, some definite improvements. You know, and what's kind of been said around here, what Lise was saying, what Tony's even saying, even with the North London Derby as well. You know, there was Jess Fishlock on there, and she was just, you know, commenting about it. And so I think for us women, it is about just the equal opportunity. I think, you know, there's been so much about this, you know, equal pay, equal that, you know, but for us even to, you know, to start that base of just to have that equal opportunity in terms of the media, in terms of the, you know, nutrition side of things, the strength side of things, the facilities, you know, for quality coaches to come in and just be given that opportunity. So now, as the Irish team, we have been given, you know, some of that, you know, equal opportunity. And you can already see the improvement, the massive improvement in, you know, in some of our results and players that are coming through or as we said that are going abroad. But now, you know, we need that equal opportunity, you know, more in the league, because there's, you know, how players have progressed, have, you know, to go play in England or play in America, is because they've come from the Women's National League. There are quality players there, and there's so many players that we have lost through the ranks because of not having that, you know, equal opportunity. You know, where there's girls still, you know, for me now, I think as well, P-men still have to pay, you know, a lot of the money to get themselves Champions League. Each individual player needs a good few hundred euro to, you know, at least to, you know, to get themselves to play in this Champions League. And that's, you know, that's how it was for me when we first qualified, you know, 10 years ago 9 years ago. But it's still the case, you know, that shouldn't have to be the case, where they have to be out of pocket to be, you know, to be representing their club and their area, and then, you know, to then be able to make that step up then into the national team, you know, that sort of thing. It has to change. And yeah, and as Mary has said as well, we've definitely, those, you know, improvements have come into the national team, but it needs to be spread out now amongst the league and to get that growing. For me, it's just taking too long, and it is tough to see. You know, you want to see that improvement, and especially in, you know, in my own sport. And again, as you said, Lidl have been a fantastic sponsor, you know, in terms of the, you know, Gaelic football. And you know, for me then, not to be able to see improvement in my sport in that league is, you know, it's really sad, and it's trying to, you know, to really figure out a way how to get that right. But exactly someone needs to be able to take it by the scruff of the neck. And, you know, I think, again, the players, you know, trying to come together and to help the FAI through that is vitally important. But, you know, we need someone it's not going to be an easy task, but believe me, by the end of it, it's going to be one of the, you know, the best achievements that you could probably achieve in football in Ireland, to get a league up and running that can at least be, you know, semi-professional, even just to start with, and to see that progression. And then it'll, you know, soon be that, you know, Irish teams and underage Irish teams are consistently getting two tournaments, you know, and be up there where we belong. So for me, it's definitely still a work in progress. We've made some steps, but I think, you know, it has maybe, you know, it's time to, you know, to keep growing and to get that equal opportunity. And, you know, as you can see, it just right across the pond in England, you know, they're doing that, and the success there just is enormous.
Louise, I just got a bit of a flashback there. You're mentioning the strike, of course, and Emma Byrne was such an important figure for Ireland and in leading the strike. And I remember going over to London to see Arsenal, I can't remember how many years ago now, and Emma, of course, was a senior figure there as well, and telling us at the time about how some of the girls, and I know the apprentice football thing was different in the old days, but how they were actually working, cleaning the men's gear. Can you remember that? And that was part of their duties as kind of apprentices.
Yeah, and that you know, that wasn't so long ago. You know, really.
That's
the point.
I mean, like, if you say that to young people these days.
Oh, stop! Yeah, they wouldn't have a clue. They'd never have heard of anything like that. But yeah, you know, that's really not so long ago. That really would have been all of them, you know, Emma, Kira Grant, Yvonne Tracy.
Yeah.
You know, so for Yvonne, it's, you know, it has been obviously now that her, you know, still her job, but she's built her way up in the men's team and is doing brilliantly. But, you know, for now, that's completely unheard of. But they've progressed. How Arsenal has progressed in that way, and then, you know, you can see it now with all the other teams. Even I feel like Everton is going to be one of those teams that has, you know, massive investments, and it's all coming to the forefront. And, you know, they've done it in relatively quick time, so a much slower process, but then the change then was quite quick. But yeah, you know, it's there, and it's, you know, it's a massive opportunity. You know, the growth of women's football isn't going anywhere. So really, it's about, you know, when are the FAI going to give in and really kind of promote the women's national league as it should be, because as I said, women's football is not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger and better. So, you know, it's just, for me, it's just time to really take that step forward.
I'm dying to know what everyone thinks about my favourite team over in England is Tottenham, of course, and Alex Morgan signing for them. How big a game changer is that?
Yeah, for me, it is. It was massive. You know, and I was watching the Arsenal-Spurs game the other day, and, you know, the camera just kept panning to her, and they were, you know, hoping that she was going to make that appearance. But it just shows that how appealing and enticing, you know, this league is for those players that are deemed to be, you know, the best in the world. They are World Cup winners, Olympic winners. You know, and I think they're coming to England because, yeah, they want a slice of that. And I think you can even see that at times it may even be more, you know, just as popular as the NWSL, you know, and to have that variety of players from all over Europe and the world now going into that league. You know, everyone really, really wants a piece of that now. And for me, it's, you know, hopefully it's going to be something now where each of those even individual clubs where they're going to, and, you know, that they're going to step it up, you know, another level, and Spurs would be one of those only recently in the WSL, but you know, they still could have seen some facility improvements and where they trained and how they trained. I think the pitch that still is their home pitch, you know, that needed massive improvements. It was, you know, waterlogged, you know, every few weeks. So for me, I think you're going to start seeing, you know, this massive improvement all because a few players are coming over, and you know, for me, it's only going to get, again, bigger and better, and more of those players coming over as well, I think.
Lisa, the problem with a lot
and even on the Tottenham thing, my team, we're playing them in 9 days' time, so my players will
be.
So
it could be Morgan's debut.
They're already really look. Yeah, like it could well be, because Tottenham play Man City this Sunday, and then they play us on Wednesday. So it could well be that she makes her debut against us, and already for my players, they're feeling that that's a massive opportunity for them to go and play against a player of that calibre and learn about how she moves and learn about how to try to mark her and stuff like that. And I know that there was a buzz, a palpable buzz when she signed, when we knew that was our first game in the Conti Cup. And it just goes to show you that not just from a profile perspective, but just from a player development perspective, for those players to be able to go and play against players at that level. And obviously we've got two Ireland internationals in our squad as well. And for them to be able to go up against a player like that, it's fantastic experience, because they will learn from that as well. And there's that side of it too, you know.
Lisa, the problem with a lot of the progress that we've been talking about here is that it is always a battle to get where you want to get to. And, you know, having to fundraise to go to Champions League is still pretty shocking. But, you know, when you have Louise and some of the other Irish girls, and they're surrounded by the best players in the world, and they're hearing what other countries are getting, and they're hearing that other countries are playing their players the same to go and represent their country, that obviously puts a lot of spotlight on the fact that the Irish players aren't being paid the same as the men to go and play for the country. Do you think the FAI should be paying them equally?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and even just, I don't think it's acceptable that the top team in this country, that players have to pay to go and play in a Champions League or fundraise to do that. I for me, that is a totally unacceptable situation, first and foremost. Secondly, I think we have to acknowledge sometimes that in women's football, we're guilty of getting anything. We're guilty of feeling grateful for anything we get, even when it's only the basics. And sometimes I think, you know, you battle and you battle and you battle, and then you get something, you're like, okay, we've got something now, and that's something to be grateful for. It shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be grateful for having the basics. That's a minimum standard, and we have to move away from that, you know, the expectation levels have to be higher and have to be demanded. And, you know, that it's not a question of equal pay. Yes, I think we have to move in line with what other countries are doing at international level, 100%, no doubt about it. In terms of the facilities and the resources, again, quite often women's teams, even at very high level, have their excellent facilities and excellent resources, but they're still not the same as the men's. So, and that's not talking about pay or anything like that. And at certain levels of the game, we're not at the point of having that conversation. But in terms of representing your country, 100%, it should be equal, the same as it is now. And it's starting to change across the board. But we also have to demand equal facilities, equal opportunities, equal resources. And we also have to move towards a point where we're grateful for the extras, not for the basics.
Well, I have to say, I was grateful to be able to watch Piemont and Shelburne, even though it was through a stream. It was nice to be able to see a game and see 7 goals scored as well. Piemont beat Shelburne 6-1, and Cara Kelly caught up with Stephanie Roach after.
Stephanie, a great win over Shelburne. You must be delighted with the result.
Yeah, absolutely delighted. I think to win against such a good team, 6-1, scoring goals. Goals coming from all over the pitch. It's a great result for us.
You're back top of the league table. That must be exactly where you want to be.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've got a really, really good squad. We slipped up against Wexford and gave them the chance to come back in. So we knew we kind of had to win today, and we did, thankfully.
You got yourself on the score sheet as twice as well yourself. You must have been really pleased to be able to come on and add the tally.
Yeah, I think it goes to show we're still so far, we're ahead of the game, and our players are still attacking and putting chances out there for me to score. So I think being in this team, you're always going to get chances, and thankfully I got two today and was able to take them.
You're playing Shelburne again in the Cup next week. What are you looking to achieve out of that?
I think not get ahead of ourselves. I think it's very easy in this league when you play a game to maybe think that you're going to hammer the teams every week, but Shells are a very, very good player with some very good team with good experienced players in there, so they'll want to be coming to beat us next week, so we have to be ready, get their heads down and training this week and be ready to go again.
Mari, listening to Stephanie there, you can tell how much she enjoys playing in the league. Unfortunately, you didn't get the win at the weekend, losing 1-0 to Galway, but mid-table, you're doing all right because it's a competitive league.
Yeah, look, the league's going to be over before we know it with the shortened league this year, but you know, you can just see from Stephanie how ruthless they are as a team, you know, and you can see with their scorelines. But yeah, look, we're not doing too badly. We're still a young club, and we know that there's a lot of improvement going forward. But it's positive. There's a lot to be done yet, but we're getting there. We're closing the gap.
Oh, that's good to hear. Mari Curtin, I'm going to let you go because we're going to move on to the League of Ireland, and Lisa Fallon as well. I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the call. I think there's still a long way to go, but it's good to be having these conversations and seeing a little bit of progress, and definitely getting the conversations started, because they're definitely needed at the moment, and I think moving forward as well, even more so just given the current situation that we're in. Now, Tony, I know that you were in Dundalk last night to see Shamrock Rovers put 4 goals past a weakened Dundalk team, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, weakened, yes, and certainly not the first choice. And yet within that team, there was probably plenty of experience as well. When you look at the likes of Chris Shields, obviously, who is suspended for the big game on Thursday against the Faroe Islands team, alongside Andy Boyle, you know, an Irish international. Also the likes of Jordan Flores, David McMillan. So although there was a second string, certainly, there was experience through it. And I thought for the first 20 minutes or so, Nathan Adua gave a lot of difficult moments to the Shamrock Rovers defence down the left-hand side, and McMillan himself brought a good save out of Manus. But Rovers were pretty relentless. I mean, their tempo was excellent, and they increased the intensity of their performance. And it's Jack Burns' night again. He got for him a scruffy goal, you'd have to say, but good build-up involving Burke and Finn. And then his corner kicks, his set pieces, deliveries in general are so good that they're just so inviting. One led to a Liam Scales header that may have been going in, may have been going wide. The unfortunate McMillan put it in his own net. And then a penalty as well, when Scales was the only way to stop him from scoring probably was for impeding him. And McInniff scored the penalty. And then at the end, I mean, with Stephen Kenny in attendance, if there was any doubt about Jack Burns' commitment or his fitness late in the game, he haired past Chris Shields, had the strength to hold him off, went round Manus, and from the narrowest of angles, finished beautifully to the net for his second goal. So he's the leading scorer now, as well as being the touchstone, the midfield maestro. So everything going right for Rovers. It's hard to see anyone stopping them now, of course. Bohemians might be a little bit upset by the 11 that Filippo Giovagnoli chose, but of course their thoughts is very much on what will be a €3 million match on Thursday against a key classic of the Faroe Islands.
Tony, just from Jack Burns' point of view, you mentioned there Stephen Kenny watching. He's going to make his squad announcement tomorrow for the Slovakia, Wales and Finland game. So it was important for him to put in that good performance last night.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, he was very close to the squad the last time. This time with the squad, well, we know that there's a couple of injuries. Troy Parrott injured, Callum O'Dowda injured as well. Robbie Brady, will he make it? Will he be named in the squad? And then we'll wait and see, because he would probably be a part of Stephen Kenny's plans. But Jack Byrne, yeah, I think he's on merit, got himself involved in the conversation. His performance against AC Milan was maybe not as comprehensive as last night, but he showed that he can do the unexpected against top class opposition. And I think AC Milan, frankly, are a much better team than Slovakia are likely to be. For a game that we have to win away from home, you're going to need that X factor at some point in the game. At some point, you're going to have to gamble. Jack Bourne would be a big gamble. But when you look at the way, for example, Jeff Hendrick played yesterday for Newcastle against Tottenham, seems to be, despite the move to a new club, seems to be lacking a spark. So you'd wonder. And I think on form, on current form and on last night's showing, Jack Bourne deserves to be in the squad.
And Lisa, you were also watching on with interest last night. I'm sure you've been keeping a very close eye on the League of Ireland since you moved away. Huge game for Dundalk on Thursday. But look, it's exactly where they want to be, a £3 million game and so close to that Europa League.
Oh, listen, massive, you know, and you can't blame them for putting the team out that they did. But certainly from a Shamrock Rovers perspective, they showed that ruthless side and that capacity to just take every opportunity and go after the game and make sure they got their business done. But from a Dundalk perspective, you can totally understand why he picked the team that he did. And, you know, yes, there was a lot of experience in the team, but also an opportunity for young players and upcoming players to get experience of a game at that level of the League of Ireland and, you know, that level of intensity that Shamrock Rovers would bring. But from Dundalk's perspective, it's a huge, huge opportunity, and it's been a very, it's been extremely turbulent the last few weeks and months for them as a club, and obviously a huge reward for them if they can get through the tie on Thursday night, and one that they will certainly feel that it's a winnable tie from their perspective.
Well, Tony was there last night and he caught up with Pat Hooban, who was quite frustrated at the fact the game went ahead.
It's kind of disappointing not to be able to play in such a glamour tie like against Rovers in the league, and you know, like, but it is what it is. Like, you know, we didn't get home till 6 o'clock in the morning, no sleep. So it was only right to make that many changes, but like, it just feels like missing out on another league game when there's not many of them anyways. So find it bizarre that we actually had to play the game, to be honest.
Yeah, when you look at priorities, you've got a chance of getting into the Europa League group stages on Thursday at the Aviva Stadium. That has to trump tonight.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. You know, like you could say, we've bigger things ahead. It's, you know, the biggest game of our lives, my life anyway, you know. And, you know, it's something we have to prepare right for because, you know, everyone's saying that it's an easier tie than the last one, but it's not. You know, they won 6-1. You don't win 6-1 in Europe for no reason, and you don't get to where you are either. So, you know, it's definitely a difficult tie for us, but, you know, one that we're going to relish.
What's the preparation going to be like to now and then?
Yeah, you know, we'll probably go into detail about them tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday, and, you know, we couldn't do anything just yet because obviously we're playing Rovers, and you know, it's going to be exciting to see what they're like and to see what their threats are and what their weaknesses are. And that's what we'll be focusing on now for the next 3 days.
Now, Pat Hooban speaking to Tony O'Donoghue there. Tony, it seems like they have their focus very much on Thursday's game.
Absolutely, they do, yeah. You know, this is the price of success, perhaps. Yeah, they had a terrific win, a dramatic penalty shootout. Hooban, one of the scorers, brilliant penalty by him, but then the travel, of course, and now they've got to make sure that they're on it for the game in the Aviva Stadium. The only, well, one of the big regret, I suppose, is the lack of fans. I remember the last time they played at the Aviva Stadium against Legia Warsaw. What an occasion that was for Dundalk in 2016. And you'd like to think that they have a lot of European games ahead of them. This Champions route has given them an ideal, a brilliant opportunity. And they've given it to themselves as well, to be fair. And they've come through now. A winnable tie, he's right to say. Don't take the opponents for granted. A bit like Icelandic football, you'd have to say the coaching in the Faroe Islands has improved dramatically. This particular club has about 6 Faroese internationals in its squad. So not to be taken lightly, but nonetheless, every other team in a playoff round would have been looking at this one and going, yeah, we'll take that. So it is a magnificent opportunity. And I wonder if Filippo Giovagnoli and Giuseppe Rossi are thinking, you know, if we get to the Europa League group stages, We could be in Dundalk for a long time. Interesting to see Andrew Quinn at 18 years of age making his debut starting last night, and a 17-year-old Val Adedokun coming on to the field and looking very good too. I mean, that is the future. Whether Giovagnoli and Rossi are the future for Dundalk remains to be seen. But if they get through a one-off tie at home at the Aviva Stadium next Thursday, it's a huge, huge opportunity.
I think we're all looking forward to that one. But Lisa, at the bottom of the table, it is quite tight. And Finn Harps and Cork City played out a one-all draw in their game over the weekend. And it's tough for both of those sides now trying to survive.
It is. It's a dogfight. And, you know, it's not going to get any easier for either team. You know, Cork City probably had the better of the game for large spells in terms of possession. But the one thing you know about Finn Harps is they are so well schooled at getting out of relegation battles, and you know it's an experience that they're used to and they're accustomed to, whereas it is new territory for Cork City. But you know, you bring a player like Raf Crataro into a game, and you know, even at his age of you know the higher end of the 30s, but he's just got bags of experience, and he's still got great feet and just that ability just to shift the ball and put it where he did, you know, and give Mark McNulty no chance. And that's a quality player. And you know, it was a game that obviously both teams probably really needed to win. But you know, and you look at the fixtures, well, both teams have tough games coming up. They both still have to play Dundalk, and you know, it's every single point matters now, and it's about winning games. It's about getting points, and it's like I say, it's almost familiar territory for Finn Harps. Like they say, they're well schooled in it and probably a bit more experienced at it, and it is new for Cork City. But it's a dogfight now, and both teams are just going to have the sleeves rolled up and get every single point that they can get their hands on, and that has to be the focus for them both.
Okay, well, we are almost out of time, but Tony, just before we finish up, I think we should just take a minute to pay tribute to Michael Hayes, who passed away yesterday following a short illness. Those that know him will know that he's a long-time League of Ireland administrator, and pretty much somebody I think that you could say has encyclopedic knowledge of the League of Ireland, Tony.
That was such a shock to hear that sad news last night as it filtered through to Oriel Park. And, you know, I could easily have rung him last night, because so often Michael Hayes is the man you'd have on speed dial if you wanted to check a stat, if you wanted to be sure about the coefficients regarding placings in UEFA, or if you wanted to know about league positions or playoffs or whatever. He was a walking, talking football encyclopedia. League of Ireland is a huge love of his, a Waterford man, just such a nice gentleman. And I think everyone in football is absolutely shocked at his sudden passing. And our sympathies extended to his family and all the people in the FAI that worked closely with him and that knew him.
Well said, Tony. Now, that is all we have time to. Thanks to you, Tony, to Louise, to Mari and to Lisa. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Stay tuned to the RTE Soccer podcast over the next few weeks, and keep an eye on rte.ie.